William starts the holidays. The Christmas holidays had arrived, and William and the other outlaws, Ginger, Douglas and Henry, whooped their way home from school at the unusual hour of 11 a.m. to the unaffected dismay of their families. "We've broke up!" yelled William as he entered the hall and flung his satchel with a clatter upon the floor. "We've broke up!" Mrs. Brown came out of the morning room, rather pale at this invasion of her usual morning quiet. "Oh, I'd forgotten you were breaking up today, William," she said. You wouldn't like to do a little quiet schoolwork here, would you, William, dear, so as to keep your hand in for next term?"
"No, thank you," said William, quite firmly. "I don't think it's fair on the other boys to go on working in the holidays."
While Mrs. Brown was slowly recovering from the startling vision of William conscientiously refraining from holiday work for the sake of his classmates, she had an idea. "William, it's so near Christmas time. Wouldn't you like to be thinking out some little presents for people?"
"I've hardly any money," said William, "what with me paying for broken windows and things."
"Well," said Mrs. Brown encouragingly, "it isn't the money you spend on them that people value. It's the thought behind it. I'm sure that with a little thought you could make some very nice presents for your relations and friends." William considered the idea in silence for some minutes. Then he brightened.
"All right," he said. "I'll go and think upstairs."
A sense of peace stole over Mrs. Brown. Later, Robert and Ethel, William's grown-up brother and sister, came to her in the morning room to talk over their Christmas party.
"I say," said Robert, "I thought William was breaking up today."
"He is," said Mrs. Brown. "He has broken up. He came home about 11 o'clock.
"He's very quiet," said Ethel.
"Well," said Robert, "let's make the most of it."
Robert and Ethel's Christmas party was a secret, only to be discussed when William was safely out of the way. William, of course, knew that it was to take place, but so far they had managed to keep secret from him the fact that after supper there was going to be a short one-act play. The shining lights of the local dramatic society, including Ethel and Robert, were going to take part. They kept this part of it particularly a secret from William because William rather fancied himself as an actor. They felt that if William knew that a one-act play was going to take place under his roof, it would be practically impossible to protect the play from the devastating effects of William's interest in it. They discussed the dancing and the supper and the play. Finally, Mrs. Brown became a little anxious and said, "Ethel, dear, I wish you'd just run upstairs and have a look at William. He's so quiet. I hope he's not feeling ill or anything." Visible gloom settled on the faces of Robert and Ethel at the mention of William, but Ethel went obediently from the room. Moments later, they heard a cry of, "Mother!" from Ethel. They dashed upstairs. William, his face and hands and hair and clothes freely adorned with green paint, sat on his bedroom hearthrug, which had shared in the wholesale application of green paint. On the hearthrug was a once white straw hat of Ethel's, upon which William had obviously devoted much labour and green paint. He had, moreover, filled it with earth and planted in it a cyclamen from the greenhouse.
"Look," said Ethel, my best hat."
Why, it's quite an old hat, Ethel," said William. "I thought you must have about done with it."
But William," gasped Mrs. Brown, "what on earth have you been doing?"
"Well, you said think out Christmas presents and make 'em and don't spend money on 'em, so I thought I'd start on Ethel's, and I thought that I could paint one of Ethel's hats and make it look like a kind of fancy plant pot with the paint from the shed and put a plant into it from the greenhouse. I thought it was rather a good idea," he ended modestly.
That was why, when William discovered about the play, he was told that he was not to see it either at rehearsals or on the evening of the party. The night of the party arrived. William, shining with cleanliness, his hair brushed and greased, encased in his Eton suit, stood a little way from the rest of his family as the guests began to arrive. Some of the guests called out, "Hello, William!" Others ignored him. William tried to look bored and indifferent, but really he was looking forward to the dancing and the supper, and he meant to watch the play from the garden through the morning room window. The guests had all arrived. The music for the dancing had begun. William stood in the drawing-room, which had been turned out for the dance, and looked round him critically. Slowly, he determined on the prettiest girl in the room, and walked across to her, baring his teeth in what was meant to be an ingratiating smile. Just as he was a few feet from her, Robert came up and claimed her, and they both moved off without looking at him. William's smile died away. He looked round the room again. All the girls seemed to be dancing now. No, there was one sitting by the window. She wasn't so bad, really, if you didn't look at her sideways. William bared his teeth again, his jaws were aching by this time, and walked up to her.
"Excuse me," he began.
A man stepped up from the other side. "Shall us?" he said to the girl, and off they went. William frowned and went with scornful dignity from the room. He went to the side door and looked out into the night. Ginger, Douglas, and Henry were coming cautiously up the path. Whenever any of the outlaws' families gave a party, the outlaws would be there, uninvited, generally in the garden, keeping a friendly eye on the affair through the windows.
"Hello, we thought perhaps you'd be dancing," said Ginger. "Oh, I got a bit tired of dancing," said William airily, "and I came out to get cool. Come and have a look at the supper."
They crept through the side door and into the dining room. There, William proudly pointed to the long trestle table, resplendent with ices and fruit and trifles and jellies of every kind. The outlaws licked their lips. "Crumbs," they gasped. Suddenly there came the sound of the opening of the drawing-room door and an influx of guests into the hall.
"Get under the table, quick," said William.
So the outlaws got under the table, quick. The guests entered. They sat round the table. William was right at the corner, next to a tall, thin young man, so the tall, thin young man had to hand the dishes to William and keep him supplied. He tried at first to talk to William, but found this difficult.
"I suppose you've broken up," he said.
"Yes," said William, his voice and face equally devoid of expression.
"Do you like the holidays?"
"Yes," said William, in the same tone of voice.
"Are you fond of lessons?"
"No."
"I expect you're looking forward to Christmas."
William, considering this remark beneath contempt, vouchsafed no answer. The tall, thin young man, crushed, transferred his attention to the lady on the other side of him. Now William was painfully conscious of the presence of Ginger and Henry and Douglas beneath the table. He could not eat in comfort with Ginger, Douglas and Henry so cramped and uncomfortable and hungry. He took two bites at the large sausage roll with which the tall, thin man had supplied him, then, looking dreamily at the opposite wall, slipped his hand under the table. There, another hand, grateful and unseen, promptly relieved him of the rest of the sausage roll. His plate was empty. The tall, thin man looked at it. Then he looked at William. William met his eyes with an aggressive stare. The tall, thin man looked at William's plate again. It was true. This child really had consumed a large sausage roll in less than 10 seconds. He then took the whole dish of sausage rolls, put them just in front of William, and turned to continue his conversation with his other neighbour. This was just what William wanted. He took a roll onto his plate and looked round. With a lightning movement, he transferred the roll to his knee and held it out beneath the table. The unseen recipient grabbed it eagerly. William did the same with a second, a third, a fourth. He grew reckless. He put down a fifth, a sixth, a seventh. There were three more on the dish. 1, 2, 3. Then he turned his aggressive stare upon the tall, thin man. As though hypnotized by the stare, the tall, thin man turned slowly to William. He looked at the empty plate and the empty dish in front of William, and his jaw dropped open weakly. He tried to say,
"And what can I pass you now?"
But he couldn't. Words wouldn't come. The sight of that enormous empty dish had broken his nerve. Just then a diversion occurred. A friend of Ethel's, almost opposite, had slipped off her shoe under the table, and a few minutes later she made a large circular sweep in search of it with her stockinged foot, and just caught Ginger on the neck where he was most ticklish. Ginger dropped his half-eaten sausage roll and gave a loud yell. A sudden tense silence fell over the table. Then the girl gave an embarrassed little giggle.
"I'm afraid I kicked your dog, or your cat, or something," she said.
She lifted up the tablecloth and grew pale.
"It's boys," she said in a breathless whisper. "Ever so many of them."
It was half an hour later. Ginger, Douglas and Henry had been ignominiously ejected. William had been dispatched to spend the rest of the evening in his bedroom. The one-act play was being performed in the morning-room, and William had commanded his outlaws to bring him some food from the dining-room. The outlaws returned very quickly to beneath William's window. "William," called Ginger excitedly, "there's a burglar in the dining room." In less than a minute, William had joined the outlaws outside the dining room window. Yes, there he was, a real burglar in dingy clothes, a cap pulled low over his eyes, his bag of tools and a half-filled sack by him. He was standing at the sideboard drinking a whiskey and soda. "We better go and tell your father," said Douglas. "Nope, we'll catch him ourselves," said William. There was an enormous curtain in a box upstairs. It would do nicely to catch the burglar in. In less than a minute, William returned with it. The outlaws crept into the dining room silently, and stealing up behind the burglar, enveloped their prey just as he was in the act of pouring out some more whiskey. He was taken completely by surprise and fell forward into a mass of all-enveloping green serge. He tried to regain his footing and failed. In his green serge covering, he was being dragged somewhere. He shouted. It happened that in the morning room, Ethel, in her capacity of heroine, had just finished singing a song, which was greeted with frenzied applause by her loyal guests. The applause drowned the burglar's shouts. Douglas flung open the French windows, and the outlaws dragged their victim out into the night, across the lawn. They hoisted the large curtain, which still contained its struggling inhabitant, into the greenhouse, shut the door, and turned the key. William was still rent by the pangs of hunger. "He's all right for a bit," he said. "He can't get up. Let's take a bit of food upstairs first. We can tell him after." The outlaws approved of this, and in a few minutes they were sitting on the floor of William's bedroom, munching happily and discussing their capture. Suddenly Ginger pricked up his ears. "Seems a sort of noise going on downstairs," he said. Very softly, the outlaws crept out onto the landing. Everyone seemed to be bustling about and talking excitedly. "Oh, do be quiet a minute while I ring up his mother," said Ethel's voice, distraught and tearful. "Hello? Hello? Is that Mrs. Langley? Has Harold come home? Hasn't he? Well, no, he's completely disappeared. We got to the point in the play where he comes on, just after my song, you know, and I waited and waited and he never came, and I had to leave the stage without finishing the scene. My nerves had absolutely all gone. We couldn't go on without him. He was playing the burglar, you know. It's quite spoilt the party, of course, and ruined the play." She was interrupted by Mrs. Brown's voice, high and hysterical. "Oh, Ethel, do fetch your father. It's too dark to see anything, but someone's breaking all the glass in the greenhouse." The entire party sallied out excitedly into the garden. The outlaws, acting with great presence of mind, fled to their several homes, and William got into bed and went to sleep. He went to sleep with almost incredible rapidity. When his family entered his bedroom a few minutes later, demanding an explanation, William lay determinedly and unwakeably asleep. "Oh, don't wake him," pleaded Mrs. Brown. "It's so bad for children to be startled out of their sleep." "Sleep," said Robert sarcastically. "Well, I don't mind. It can wait till tomorrow for all I care. The party's ruined anyway."
Fortunately, they did not look under the bed, or they would have seen a large plate piled with appetizing dainties. They went away with threatening murmurs in which the word tomorrow figured largely. When they had gone, William got out of bed with great caution and sat in the darkness munching iced cakes. That sleep idea had been jolly good. Of course, he knew it couldn't go on indefinitely. He'd have to wake up tomorrow. But tomorrow was tomorrow, and when tonight holds an entire plate of iced cakes, many of them with layers of real cream inside, tomorrow is hardly worth serious consideration.